Are you going to sit at the table because you're, like, important? Like, you sit at the table.
Whether it's reminding or not, like, you know.
Inside.
These little, this little corner, right?
Yeah. Said, oh, sorry.
You know what? They're very well fitting. They don't
over drinks and say, oh, that's going to be a lot of charge. It's very hard.
Good, thank you very much. I cannot complain.
not a big deal, you know, just in case you think that it's necessary to pay attention.
Good.
Yeah.
So, I'm more than happy to be assigned. Thank you.
It is 3:16 according to this clock. If you all could take your seats, and folks who are supposed to be up at this table, come on up.
Come on, folks, grab your seats. Let's get going. We're eating into valuable contracted parties house time here.
Good, how are you, man?
Let's all take our seats, please and thank you.
All right, we are going to start.
Really up front row, aren't you?
Could we please start with a roll call at the table, starting with you, James?
Thanks, Becky. James Bladel, GoDaddy, Registrar.
Jonathan Robinson, Registry Stakeholder Group with Affilius.
Karen Day, Registry Stakeholder Group Treasurer with SAS.
John Nevitt, Registry Stakeholder Group, Donuts. Samantha Demetrio, Registry Stakeholder Group Vice Chair with VeriSign.
Yara Morby, ICANN.org.
Graham Bunton from Two Cows, Chair of the Registrar Stakeholder Group.
Paul Diaz from PIR, Chair of the Registry Stakeholder Group.
Becky Burr, ICANN Board.
Chris Despain, ICANN Board.
Keith Drazik, Registry Stakeholder Group, GNSO Counselor, and VeriSign.
I'm McKinney Nayland, Registrar Stakeholder Group, and GNSO Counselor.
Rumescu, Registry Stakeholder Group from NIC.br.
Stefan, would you like to introduce yourself?
Thanks, Chris. Stefan Van Gelder, Registry Stakeholder Group Vice Chair for Policy.
Okay, I believe that we are going to start with the questions that we received from the contracted parties house. Do we have those up? If we don't, it doesn't matter because I happen to know that Paul Diaz is going to present the first point if he's listening. It's just a really unruly crowd.
All right, so where are questions? Yeah, we have...
There's something on the button.
Something about budget, indeed. So the first item, I think, is the the budget and the reluctance to return the excess application fees. What we're talking about here is, for some time now, the Registry Stakeholder Group has had conversation with staff about what we see as double billing for the Trademark Clearinghouse. In the original application fee, various services were anticipated to be paid for. The Trademark Clearinghouse, there was a special fee levied on everybody as well. That $5,000 per application, we feel, should be returned back to the registry operator, or to the applicants. The pool of funds, the excess application fees fund, is quite substantial. It's a cost recovery program. It all cost a lot less than expected. So, we've argued that the time is right, that this is an opportunity for ICANN organization to work with the registries. And we wanted to bring it to the attention of the board at this time because in an era where finances are a big concern, when we have agreement on the circumstances of this particular one, the funds are there. They're not part of the regular budget. They're part of that, would come out of that excess application fees surplus pool. We're hoping that the board understands. Happy to go into more detail. At the very least, if there's agreement to encourage staff to, move forward with us and try to get this particular issue off the plate and resolved.
So I can report that the board did discuss this in our workshop. The org talked about the question about the Trademark Clearinghouse, the $5,000 allocation, and informed us that they have concluded that $5,000 excess, or that $5,000 Trademark Clearinghouse would be considered part of the excess fees, and so it would be added to that pot. The timing on the disbursement or allocation or whatever happens to that, we still have a couple of pretty potentially serious issues that have to be resolved. So I can confirm that we have agreement that the $5,000 per participant allocation goes into that fund and will be allocated as part of that.
Okay, Becky, thank you. I'd like to follow up on the timing of that. That's the same argument we've heard for 5 years now. And with an excess application surplus pool of north of $80 million, I misspoke, 3 years now. But with over $80 million, I really struggle to understand how staff can continue to argue that they need to have those funds in place just in case I mean, Lord help us if we have legal challenges that approach anywhere near that number. We're all collectively doing something very, very wrong. So I very much appreciate that we're in alignment about what happened and an agreement to try and reconcile it. But, you know, if we have to wait yet more months, years, however long it's going to be, it's very, very hard to reconcile, and would appreciate a little more clarity on why that argument about, well, we got to wait till it's all done, continues to be used. We're talking in the area of $6 million if all the applications were refunded, that extra $5,000 they were charged. So, I mean, it's a small fraction of the pool that currently exists.
Paul, it's Chris. So, first of all, as a lawyer, $80 million doesn't sound that much. It's entirely possible that we could spend that very easily. And I'm only sort of semi-joking. I mean, it is quite feasible to spend that. Also, as a lawyer, the tail of these things can be quite long, and it is. Challenging to call a time where you say, you know, enough. But I do understand and I empathize that for us to continue to talk about maintaining the money for the, you know, for the tail, can't, without any form of discussion about when that might end, is probably not something we continue to do for very much longer. For what it's worth, right now, if you asked me, I would say we haven't reached a point yet where I would be comfortable, but I'm talking personally, where I would be comfortable. But that said, I acknowledge that it would be a good discussion for us to have, to come back to you and say, look, all things being equal, blah, blah, we think, you know, a reasonable time would be this from where we are. I know that's not an answer that you're looking for, but I'm just being straight with you.
I appreciate the candor. Any of my colleagues want to jump in on this particular issue? We've heard clearly from the board, but any clarifying questions or concerns? All right, not going to belabor it. Again, we do appreciate half a loaf is better than nothing, but we'll look to continue the conversations. All right then, why don't we move on to the next issue, keep rolling, which again is sort of financials related. As you can see on the screen, you know, the question in a nutshell is, you know, looking to see a better use of both existing and fiscal year 19 budget and the reserve fund replenishment with, as we described it, without taxing the already challenged value chain. We saw the document that was published just before everybody came to Puerto Rico. It included a range of possible ways. Let's focus on the reserve fund. A range of possible ways the fund could be replenished that included extraordinary fees, extra fees on registries, registrars. Want to make sure that that was just being comprehensive and that is not being actively entertained. We feel that the fees are more than enough where they are now and would like to see the replenishment strategy come from somewhere other than out of the registries, registrars. But perhaps I should shift this one. Jonathan, if you don't mind, or James, to my colleagues.
Yeah, thanks, Paul, and thanks for having us for this session. Jonathan and I were respectively on point for the comments that were submitted on the FY19 budget from the registries and registrars. Obviously, there's quite a great deal of alignment in those comments. I think we have some specific concerns, not only about the overall fiscal approach of ICANN, but also some specific ideas regarding the reserve fund replenishment strategy and possibly some proposals that you may not have considered. But before we kind of dive in, I think generally the tone of the public forum yesterday was, you know, we need these things, you can't cut them, put them back. I think maybe the sentiment from this group is, you're heading in the right direction. We want to acknowledge that you're making difficult decisions, and difficult decisions are necessary, and we want to provide you with the support and, if necessary, the cover to continue to push back on the community to ensure that the organization is able to live within its means. I think, look to us to be that backstop. So with that, I think Jonathan has some outlined some of our specific comments and questions relative to the budget and the reserve fund.
And I think it's important, thanks James, it's Jonathan Robinson for the record. So as James said, we both worked separately on coordinating the team within the registries, the small discussion group within the registries and the registrars that dealt with budget comments. And we understand there are multiple forums for dealing with the budget. So this isn't really budget per se, but this is about strategic approach to ICANN financials and how that's manifest in the budget and talking with you. And we'd like to talk with you a little bit more about it. As James said, first and foremost, we're very supportive of the work that you as a board are doing to make sure, and through the chief executive, are making sure that you're in. That's you. Through your chief executive, are managing your finances and managing to live within your means. So we like that. We both submitted comments. It was a tight time frame. We all know the four-letter word of GDPR that's been distracting a lot of us, so we were less coordinated than we would have liked to have been. But as it turns out, our responses were quite well correlated. We have a similar view. Now, you might say that's not surprising, but I think that some of the key points were, as we've said, ICANN living well within its means. And what we mean by that, though, is not spending your income. We mean spending less than your income. So I think that's where we're at. We would like to see you spend less than your income. And in order to, and in so doing, to be prepared to use the surplus that's generated to contribute to the reserve fund. We think that's the proper way to run the corporation. There was some concern in our groups about the projection of the top line, and we'd like to help you in making sure you do that as accurately and probably relatively conservatively as possible. Now, there is some sensitivity to that, because for us to come back and encourage you particularly to be conservative could have an impact on some of our businesses, especially to the extent that those are publicly quoted entities. So we need to work carefully with you in a structured way, but to help you make as accurate as possible projections, and we're very willing to do that. As I said, to the extent that a surplus is targeted and achieved, we'd like to see that contributed to the reserve fund. We clearly think that the primary mission of ICANN is policy development work, and we'd like to see that adequately and well funded, and we'll support you in anything that you do to ensure that takes place. And I think in terms of seeing the forest for the trees or the wood for the trees, that's important. We strongly believe that policy development work needs to be well funded. And there's a sort of sub-theme to that, which I think Jeff would like to speak to in particular, which includes ensuring that implementation work is undertaken in a timely and well-funded way. So we can come to that in a moment, Jeff, but just sort of teeing up the key points. And clearly the cost of staff and travel funding has increased substantially in recent years. And so we'd like to encourage you to continue to deal with that and other high expenditure in the way to keep a close eye on that and deal with it appropriately. One of the specific questions on that is there's been a reference to sort of being locked in to 85% of the budget. That really only a small proportion of the budget is in one sense discretionary. I think we'd like you to talk to that and explain that a little more and help us to understand that, because from where we see it, there's significant expenditure in staff and other items that has continued to grow over the recent past. And so we'd like to understand why you are unable to sort of deal with that. So those are some of the thoughts and issues, and there's obviously a couple. This is about dialogue. This isn't about us giving you a budgetary comment. This is about trying to talk with you about understanding things. So hopefully I've teed that up. There's a couple of contributions I know from contracted party speakers, and hopefully that lends itself then to some discussion around these various topics. So I'll hold. Okay, I'll stop now and leave the various dialogue to start to develop.
I think we, before we go to the floor, just one. Shireen is going to talk about the reserve fund issue.
Thank you, both James and Jonathan. You mentioned a few things about the FY19 budget and staff, and I'll let Joran answer those. But I want to go back to some of the points you made regarding the reserve fund. And I see two in particular, and I'm going to add one more. One is here, taxing an already challenging value chain. So we certainly made it, I hope we made it very clear in the consultation paper we sent out that we are not intending to tax or even come anywhere near suggesting that the contracted parties should make a contribution to the reserve fund. So although we, for completeness, we said that, but we've also put a principle in the document to that effect. So I hope you've read that message, and I'm going to give you the assurance now that that's the absolutely we will stick to that, right? So that's one thing. In terms of spending less than income, I 100% we agree with you. And in fact, we did say something, and I'll read it. They said a future adopted budget could be made to provide a contribution to the reserve fund on an annual basis. This would require ICANORG to plan each fiscal year for expenses to be lower than funding, by an amount explicitly designated for the purpose of replenishing the reserve fund. So I think we are in absolute agreement on that point. The other thing I want to bring to your attention is the governance of the reserve fund itself. So far, we have published two consultation papers, and there is a third one to come. The first one was on the level, right? What should be the level and what should be the purpose of it, i.e. the reasons of when we are allowed to tap in. And I think the community responded, and overall we've agreed that the level should be minimum of 12 months, and we've passed a resolution to that effect. Now, that immediately, you make your calculation, it showed a deficit of 68 million. And this document that we posted is about the various sources of where, and we've put some ideas. The one idea we said is not, we're not going to touch, is taxing the contracted parties, right? So when this is done, we're going to begin working on the governance. And the governance means that what are the policies of how to manage the reserve fund and to withdraw money from it. And we want to put a consultation paper out so that the community is part of that. We want to be transparent, and we want you to be part of that and put ideas. So I think we are aligned on those three things. Would you agree with that?
Look, Shireen, that's very helpful, and thank you very much for that. I think in many ways we are, and it's useful to hear your thinking. And I think we want to talk with you about budget, reserve fund, and board attitude. And clearly these are intertwined, and you've described that very well. I suppose the one additional comment I should make is that, simply for the record and to make sure it's clear, that as it happens, the registry's response on the quantum of the reserve fund to part one of your approach was that it was our desire that was only 6 months. And I think there's a reasonably strong set of thinking in there that notwithstanding that, we acknowledge that the balance of the public consultation led you to a 12-month decision, and you know that's water under the bridge to some extent. But there remains a concern that the reserve fund is fully funded, and by that I mean it could fund 12 months full fat operation, for want of a better description, rather than a scaled back emergency core functions. And so that's the ongoing concern. I'm not sure we need to get into that now, but I just thought it was useful in the context of all of this to recognize what the comment was here.
As soon as you mentioned that, Xavier jumped from his seat, so he's there, he wants to.
Come on, X.
Go on first.
Xavier.
Hello? Yep. I will start. Let's go back to some of the things that, because it's important that we share the same information with you as we've done with everybody else. And so I would like to do my, what I now call it, my budget dance, and go through some of the things. You may not ask for them, but they could be interesting anyway. Yes, we are entering into a period where we see funding coming into us flattening it out. We see that already this year, where we have $8 million less funding than we expected. That's 5% of the total funded budget, so it's not a big thing. That means that we, over the years, have been fairly successful of forecasting funding into us. We always appreciate more input. Cyrus is doing a fantastic job with many of you to come up with the numbers in the first place, but we can always be better. That was the top line. You used the word fat. And coming back to your questions about the 8085, before I go into that, there's been some discussion about travel programs and other ones, and I would like to point out some things. There's that already this year we are doing efficiency measures within ICANORG, otherwise we wouldn't have survived this year. And next year, the sort of internal cost is about in the range of $8.6 million. That's 6.5% of the budget. And as an example, which I shared a couple of times, is that we are increasing travel spending for the community with about 12%, and we're decreasing this with about 12% for ICANORG personnel. We hope we can do that without having a challenge during the ICANN meetings, for instance. But one of the, I think, very good things with this week shows, again, how fantastic ICANN is, because one of the things I cannot do, and I'm responsible for throwing the first stone, that's my job, and I can appreciate how much you appreciate that I'm the one who throws the first stone. And we set a sentiment for this budget process in a certain way. We try to be more transparent. But it's driven a very interesting discussion, and that's about all the fixed costs we have. Because I can't, for instance, and reviews has been some of the things that we've been talking about, I can in the budget propose, for instance, that we are going to delay 1 year something that is in the bylaw to say that a year later. I have to put it into the budget. So, and I think that one thing that comes for me during this meeting so far has been that let's talk about the 85%. The 85% comes out of reviews, results out of reviews, bylaws, and for instance, policies. And 2019 is a little bit of a perfect storm year in that sense that we have flattening funding. We are, through the policy of rotating meetings, we are rotating a meeting to Japan, which is more expensive than many other meetings. It's also the first year, really, we take the full costs of many of the transparency measures we put in place for the transition as itself. So if you see the amount of people that we have increasing, many of them comes out of the transition. Not all of them, but some of them. And also when we now operationalize the new GLT program. But it's still, so if we actually starting to have discussions about the 85%, the problem is that I was not aware, and I think nobody knows who starts that discussion. But I think that I'm very happy about this discussion. We have to be financially prudent, not only for 1 year, but also for several years. And one thing I realized during the last couple of days as well, or you knew about it, is that we are draining you with work. To run 9 reviews next year, including an accountability one, when I told people this, they look at me like, what are you going to do about it? The answer is, we have to do something about it. Because the interesting thing is also that 3 or 4 years down the road, we will have 1 or 2. And I can't, when you look at my staffing for that, I have a skeleton crew for reviews, and when we have many reviews, I have to hire people from external. That costs money. Not to mention the fact that we are sort of driving you to do much more reviews, navel gazing is not what I would call it, of course, but instead of doing policy work. And the other thing is actually the budget processes itself. So we throw out a budget at a particular point in time before Christmas, just to make sure that you have a good Christmas. And then we have a short period of time for your comments come in. I think we have 150 something comments coming in. And then we have a short period of time where we prepare that material together with the board, make a decision about the budget, and then we throw it back again to have the empowered community possibility as well. We have done all those dates. I'm starting to think that we should do a 2-year budget process instead. It takes 15 months to do a 12-month budget, so maybe we can have a 2-year project where we lock it down for 2 years, so we have time in the community to actually have some of those essential discussions without pressing ourselves. So I'm very happy about the discussion. I'm very happy for your support. And in the material, as Shireen said, a part of the replenishment of the reserve fund will come from operations, and that's a substantial amount of money. And to be able to do that, we have to talk about the 80-85%. Thank you.
Shireen, and then I promise we're going to go to Jeff.
Go to Jeff.
Okay, Jeff.
Oh, thank you. Jeff Newman, the registries have asked me to talk a little bit about something I saw that was said, and I just kind of did a double take. I just want to ask, you did say that there was going to be budget now for operationalizing the next round of new GTLDs. Was that what was said?
No, I haven't said that. This is one of the sort of technical problems.
Did anyone see that? Okay, then I can make my comment then.
No, do you ask the principal question? I can answer the principal question, if I may. And the problem may answer your question already. We have a problem of putting into the budget things that is not decided by the community. We have a discussion in the board right now how to address that problem as well. But it's hard for us. And we have several. Not only this program, we have discussion about Workstream 2, and there are other initiatives. And it's sort of hard for us to say that, we anticipate that the community now will have this solution to something. Because you will scrutinize that when we come out to the budget and say, we haven't decided that. And you will probably say to me, Göran, now you're interfering in the policy-making process. So it's a principal question as well. We have been able to sort that out when we had growing funding. We could always think something there, but now we can't. So we took the decision of not doing that. What we're doing instead is that the board and we are engaging in a financing if we should do something with a new program, because we can look about the financing of that. But I think you agree on the principle of not to put things into the budget that is not decided by the community. Thank you.
I do agree with... Sorry, this is Jeff Newman. I do agree with the principle of not putting things into the budget that's not decided by the community. But the community decided in 2008, and the board unanimously approved, moving forward with a new GTLD process that was not just one round. It was a predictable process for the introduction of new GTLDs, which at the time was assuming the next round would kick off in 1 year. So I want to remind you that that's incredibly important. It has been decided. What the other thing I want to say, which I guess relates, my comments are relevant. Prior to the 2012 round starting, ICANN actually started budgeting in fiscal year 2007 for that process. So they actually budgeted for about 6 years on different things. Now, given at that time it was thought that the new GTLD round would launch in fiscal year 2010, but that's still 3 years in advance, 3 fiscal years in advance. So to say that you're not putting anything aside this time around is actually not just saying that we can't start a new round in fiscal year 2019. It's saying no to fiscal year 2019, no to 2020, no to 2021. And I think that's incredible. It's critical. And I have a whole list of things that were done on here that I will go over with Xavier tomorrow during the budget session on all the things that they did to get ready for the 2012 round and ramping up. There were decisions that were made, unfortunately, in the 2012 round. We can't change now, meaning an application system that was a one-time use throwaway system. So we know right now we're going to need an application system. We know right now it's going to have feel. I mean, there's a lot of things we actually do right now, but we can't be put in a position to actually have to wait until the board makes an affirmative decision to approve the policies that come out from the GNSO before we start thinking about implementation. If we do that, then we're not talking about 21, 22, we're talking about 23, 24, 25. And just to remind everyone, the last round was 2012. If we can't launch by fiscal year 2021, 22, an entire decade. Think about that. An entire decade between the launch of two rounds. And that is not something that ICANN as an organization should be proud of, especially when it said it was going to launch within 1 year. I will also point, last point, the community never asked the board to stop. The board told the community it was going to wait for the community to again ask it to commence the next round, which was backwards to begin with. Let's fix it. And in the budget, that doesn't just mean extra dollars, and we don't even need that much extra dollars. It's reallocating those employees that you move to operations from the new GTLD program. But if they stay in operations, that's fine. I don't want to control personnel. But then allocate them the responsibilities of working on the program. You should prioritize things and programs that are decided on by the community before we go to other projects. And the GNSO has approved unanimously, the board approved, and then restated again in what, 2013, 14, or 15, said that we are going to start the next round as expeditiously as possible. Thanks. Thank the one person. Thank you.
So, Jeff, I said this at the GNSO Council, that A, the board is committed to next round. B, we're having a workshop in another month where we're beginning to think about preparation for a next round, pending receiving recommendation from the GNSO on the PDP. So. So we are conscious of the time scales and the timeline now that things are coming towards the end of the PDP, and we are going to sit down with GDD and Joran and start thinking on preparing what needs to be done during FY19 and where the money is going to come from. So, point taken. Are you unhappy?
No, thank you. This is Jeff. I think that's great news. And I know that the subsequent procedures, the people that are working on that would be happy to know that and would certainly volunteer to, if you need other prep material for your workshop, we can get that to you. So I appreciate that and thank you.
Stefan?
Thanks very much, Paul. Stefan Van Gelder speaking. Just to come back to the question of reviews and repeat something that we discussed earlier on during our constituency day, but I think it's also a point that's worth making here. The budget impact of reviews obviously is associated with the sheer number of reviews that we're looking at, plus the time scale of these reviews, and only one of those reviews, ATRT3, is committed to a specific timeline of 1 year. The others are not limited, so they could have a significant budget impact. And as Joran mentioned earlier on, there is a high number of reviews. So we're not only looking at budget impacts, we're also looking at the impact on the volunteer community, the impact on the organization's ability to absorb these reviews. And we have to question, I think, the fact that if we're embarking on 9 reviews, many of which have no specific timelines, we may find ourselves in a situation where by the time we finish reviewing, we start reviewing again, and we never, ever take anything away from these reviews apart from just doing that work again, which in budget terms specifically, as this is what we're discussing, makes absolutely no sense.
Stefan, I agree with you. Everything you've said, I just want one small correction, which is, whilst you're right that a timeline of a year is mentioned in ATRT, it actually should complete, not must. So, in fact, it's actually possible for ATRT to also run over, but I acknowledge that it's there. But I just thought it was important to call that out. Thanks. Apparently, I glee with you, which is exciting news for me, no doubt, just as exciting for you.
Can I ask you a question, then, about this? So assume that I will come, you know, I will go home from this meeting and together with the board come up with a paper that gives some examples on the what we call the 85%, including one of the reviews. And you will answer what you think about those things, and maybe one of those things that you would say, go and look about how you can change the cadences of the review, let's call it that. And maybe we can do that, because it's a bylaw change, so we have to interact. Would you think that would be a good idea? Could you, for the record, say it's a good idea and stuff just shaking your head? Or you can also say, that is another stupid idea. That was a joke and go home.
I've got Keith and then John.
Okay, thank you, Joran. This is Keith Drazik for the transcript. I think that would be a fantastic idea. Frankly, I think the reviews are too important. As you noted, not navel-gazing. They are too important as an accountability mechanism to not treat appropriately, and I think in order to do them right, we need to make sure that we have both community resources, volunteer time, and staff resources, and appropriate attention from the board at the right moments to make sure that these reviews are done properly. To your point, having 9 in a single year, or 9 commencing in a single year, is simply not something that I think any of us can support in an appropriate fashion. So I think, to your point, somebody has to throw the first stone. Putting something out there for discussion with the community, I think, would be highly appropriate. And speaking personally, I would very much welcome that. If we need to find the proper cadence, I think that's an appropriate path forward. Thanks.
Thank you, Keith. John?
Thanks, John Nevitt. I would agree as well. I think it's a great idea. I think that every dollar in expense that we cut from our budget, we get $2 of benefit in the reserve fund, because the budget goes down and the revenue goes up. So you have an extra dollar for every dollar you cut. So the double benefit in reaching the reserve fund would be very helpful, and we should be looking at cutting our belts, tightening our belts. There's pressure, as Jonathan mentioned, on the revenue side with maybe less than conservative predictions. And there's also pressure, in the last topic, we talked about the new TLD budget of somehow it's now $80 million in estimated excess application fees. In February, it was $95.8 million. And if you look in the budget in 4.1, somehow evaluation costs went up by $8 million estimate. And overheads, increase in allocation for the new TLD budget went up by $4.6 million estimate. And so I'm also worried that we're taking some money out of the new TLD program fund and using it for ongoing operations. And if we take a look at that, that might be a concern, and that might cause even more pressure. So the more pressure we have on the budget, the more pressure there is to cut the budget, and the benefit we'll get doubles because the actual expense budget goes down, so the amount we need for the reserve fund goes down, and we'll have that extra revenue. So I strongly support your idea. Thank you, Aaron.
Thank you, John. Savi, I saw you stand up. Do you have anything? No. Okay. And for the record, I think I used the number 80 earlier, and loosely. Okay. I want to make sure that I'm not being quoted, because I don't even know where to find the actual current dollar amount. Jonathan, I saw your hand, please.
It's Jonathan, just for the record. But does anyone want to respond directly to John before I come in? I'm just following up on similar theme, but if there's no direct responses. Okay, so two things. One,
on the reviews and the cadence of the reviews and so on, I'll add support to your own suggestion. I think we need a paper that suggests here's how the reviews might be planned for the next for the forthcoming financial cycle, whether that's a 3 or a 5 year plan, and we should work with you to optimize the cadence of those. And I think that, to me, it seems like a standalone piece of work. I think that's separate to the 85% question, and I know I see how they're connected in that the reviews are part of that underlying core expenditure, but I think we'd like to look deeper than just the reviews as well. And so to the extent that you can expose to us other similar problems that might help the organization to be, or help you, Joran, and your staff to manage the organization more efficiently, if we were to support you, we should hear, you know, similar areas like that. So separating out the two, let's certainly try and deal with the cadence of the reviews, and let's help you with other areas that might make your ability to run the organization more efficiently improved. Thanks.
Michele, please.
Thanks, McCain. And for the record, very briefly, fully supportive of the comments others made about this new term we've coined, the cadence of the reviews. I'll have to get an acronym for that one, or else it won't be really ICANN. Also, I mean, it's when you're looking at the budget in general, I mean, the focus needs to be on projects that are directly related to ICANN's mission. And part of that is also serving the contracted parties. So at a previous ICANN meeting, we asked Joran and the board directly about what was happening with the portal for registrars. And we are happy to see that there has been some movement on this. However, the timeline that was presented to us this morning was a little depressing. And on pushing a little bit further to find out why the timeline was so long, we were told that this was due to a lack of resources being set on that particular project. So we would love to ask you if you could possibly give them a little bit more resources so that that could be done in a more timely fashion. Thanks.
Thank you for not asking for more resources.
You're welcome, Joran.
Could I make, if you want to, at one point in time, anyone are interested how we reshaped the project development in IT, because we've made, since we met, when I showed my throat to you, we did a major overhaul of the whole project planning process internally when it comes to IT projects. We don't have to do that now, but we can meet up and we can talk about it. Yes, I did say that to him, I showed my throat. So let's talk about that, because we are restarting, and with the help of Ash and also the executive team, we now do it differently and hopefully more transparency and more important, that we can keep our promises going forward. Thank you.
Yeah, not sure. Other questions? Follow-ups from the floor? Not quite done. We're going to get to that, Joran. Why don't we do one that I think will go fairly quickly. Moving on then, the third bullet here about IGO acronyms. And I've asked John Nevitt, he's going to introduce this issue.
Thanks, Paul. As probably everyone in the room knows, the IGO acronyms are contractually reserved by registries. We are not allowed to sell the IGO acronyms or register them to any party, including the IGOs themselves. Now, this has been going on for 5 years since we signed our first registry agreements in 2013. We tried to take a simple approach 2 years ago and filed an RCEP asking for the right to provide the IGO acronyms to the actual IGOs themselves. That RCEP was approved, but is in deep freeze pending community support on community outcomes on the policy development side. There is a board resolution calling for the reservation of these names, and ICANN staff didn't feel comfortable signing an amendment that goes against that board resolution. 9 months ago, we received a letter from an IGO called Euclid University. Euclid University is an African education support IGO, and they wanted not surprisingly, Euclid.University. We sent a letter to ICANN asking for a waiver of that reservation for that single name. That was denied. We have IGO names that are generic terms, loss, idea, who, eco. None of those could be provided to those IGOs themselves or anyone else because they've been reserved for 5 years. And then the question is, what could we do about it? What could we do as a community? Today we learned in our session with GDD staff that it's an ICANN board issue, and that we essentially can't do anything until the expiration of the curative rights working group that was in a document today. And our view is that's wrong. That's plain wrong. We have the ability to do a simple fix. We did it with two characters. We could provide protections in the agreements. It's up to the ICANN board in the contract with every registry. It says, as instructed from time to time by ICANN as instructed from time to time by ICANN, registry operator will implement the protection mechanisms determined by the ICANN board of directors relating to the protection of identifiers for the intergovernmental organizations. So this is a board issue. We could fix it like we did two characters. We could add a term and condition in our contract saying anyone who registers a domain name that matches an IGO can't use that domain name to hold themselves out as the IGO. We did that with the two characters. We've sold over 10,000 two-character names that resemble country code names, and we have not had one complaint. So this is an issue that could be fixed if we have the courage to do that. As a nominating committee member, that's one of the factors I'm going to be looking for is courage. Courage to take a stand, not hide behind a PDP that might go on for 5 years, not hide behind other processes, but we have a problem, let's fix it, and there's an easy fix. So I think the courageous members of the board that are here will help us and do that, and we look forward to working with you to get that done. Thank you.
Thank you, John. The board has courageously chosen me to answer that question. Although I am going to bounce a couple of things off Akram, so if you want to grab a mic, Akram, or go to the microphone. So, John, you'll forgive me if I'm going to sort of go through it slowly because I want to make sure that we don't misspeak here. So, first of all, in respect to the names of the IGOs, the names, not the acronyms, the names, my understanding is that issue is now basically dealt with. They are reserved, and they can be registered by the IGO. So everything we are now talking about is not names, it is acronyms. Correct. In respect to the specific one that you mentioned, Euclid, I'm just going to digress slightly in respect to that one. I'm aware of that one plus a couple of others that shouldn't even really be on the list. If someone can explain to me how Euclid can possibly be an acronym of Euclid University, I'll be fascinated to know how that works. It is their name, and if they wanted to, I'm sure we could find a way of taking it off the list, and they would then be able to register Euclid.University. The problem is they've chosen to put it on a list of acronyms, and unless they take it off, we'd have to fix it another way. I will, just so that I'm not singling out Euclid alone, I will tell you that a very famous institution known as the Commonwealth also believes that Commonwealth is an acronym of the Commonwealth. This is fascinating. I don't normally get this reaction.
It's Xavier who's doing a budget session.
Extraordinary. So, leaving aside the fact that there may well be acronyms that can be taken off and then registered, let's go to the baseline point. What we have is GAC advice that says that the acronyms should Actually, no, before I go there, I want to deal with one other point you raised, which is we cannot allow in the current process the IGOs to say, I would like to register my acronym, because the problem with that is that gives them a right to that acronym. So you couldn't say to OECD, we will release your acronym if you want to register it, because the problem with that is that they may not be the only people entitled to it. And perhaps a better example is WHO or IDEA. You wouldn't want to prefer the IGO in that, because that implies that they have a right to it. And the dispute that's arisen between, well, not dispute, but the reason why the board told the GAC that it wasn't comfortable with its advice to reserve the IGO acronyms was that the IGOs have no rights to those acronyms as such. They certainly don't have a preemptive right. They can go in to try and register them, and that's fine, but they certainly couldn't stop other people from registering them. So you can't do that. All you can really do is solve the actual problem itself. Now, we have GAC advice that says reserve them. The board has told the GAC that we won't do that. What we will do is try and find a way of helping them. The way that we came to for helping them, Bruce, who's here somewhere, Bruce Tonkin, thank you, Bruce. Bruce facilitated a discussion that led to an understanding that ICANN would create a watch list that would enable the IGOs to be notified in the event that an acronym was registered. Now, similar to Trademark Clearinghouse, but with some slightly different rules. That is something that we need to do in respect to letting them know that someone has registered the name. The other problem that they have, what is that they believe they have no curative rights. We can argue about whether they do or they don't, but they believe that they don't. And that's what the GNSO PDP, which I think was being chaired by Phil Corwin and someone else, I can't remember, is working on. And it for the IGOs, it goes as a package. It's give us the watch list and give us some curative rights. That means that we will reluctantly give up our GAC advice. Now, what's the alternative? The alternative is that we take the GNSO policy recommendation in respect to IGOs in the first PDP, which doesn't deal with curative rights but deals with the other side of the coin, and we take the GAC advice, which is to register, reserve those IGOs, and we sit down as a board and say, those two are at odds with each other, what do we do? And we felt and continue to feel that the better way to deal with it is to find a way of having, in essence, the GAC be satisfied with what we put in place, and the GNSO able to proceed with dealing with the names. So my view, for what it's worth, is that if we are close to finalising, are we close to finalising the PDP? Do we know? Do I know the answer to that question? We are close to finalising.
I was told by the chair of the PDP that it's off the rails and unlikely to be resolved anytime in the near future.
Okay, so now we're into sort of uncharted territory. So I've done my bit and said that's where I believe we are. Does anybody want to talk about the PDP itself? Sorry, Akram, thank you. You nodded. That was all I needed. It was brilliant. Thanks. There's no better nodder than Akram. Phil.
Hello, I'm Phil Corwin. I'm one of the two co-chairs of that PDP. The other is Peter Renforth, former IPC counselor on council. The situation in the PDP, when we met in Abu Dhabi, I thought we were very close to conclusion. We had three policy options. One of them had gotten what appeared to be strong consensus. What's occurred since then was that a number of members of the working group announced that they were reversing their position on that. We went from and members began bringing up new policy options after our initial call for support, and now we have six policy options. Another member, the chairs then attempted to poll the full membership of the working group to get a sense of where they were at on these new options so that we could initiate the consensus call process, and one of the members of the working group filed an appeal under Section 3.7 of the GNSO Working Group Guidelines, which has essentially prevented the working group from holding any meetings for the past 3 months. Recently, the co-chairs held a call with the appellant and offered what we thought was a reasonable compromise that met him more than halfway. He refused it. He continued his appeal. He spoke with the chair of GNSO Council and the council liaison to the working group, and the council liaison at this meeting and over the next week or two will be individually reaching out to all the members of the working group to see where they are on the current options and to let the co-chairs then know of what the situation is. So we've had extensive unexpected delay because of unexpected development since Abu Dhabi, and I certainly can't predict the outcome, but my feeling, unless something significantly changes within the stated positions of the working group members, particularly the bloc that's most active, that seems to not want us to reach a conclusion on the central issue, which is the IGO claim to judicial immunity, which might arise in a registrant appeal, is we might be in a final situation where we may have a majority of the working group in favor of a particular approach that recognizes that concern, but not a high enough level to have consensus that could be approved by council. So that's the situation. We've done our best as co-chairs to resolve it, but those efforts have been fruitless because of one particular member of the working group, and we're looking forward to working with the council liaison, who's beginning her outreach tomorrow at what had been a scheduled meeting of the working group and now will be a session where she can listen to members. So hopefully we'll have a better sense of where we're at with the membership, I think within 2 weeks after the end of this meeting. But that's really all I can tell you right now because of the confused state of the working
group. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are you okay to carry on talking about this? Okay, so what happens if it's not a consensus recommendation or no recommendation? What's the GNSO rules on that?
Then there's no policy, but it's not a policy issue according to the contract. It's a contract issue. So we could work out protections that don't go through a policy development process like we have done in other cases, including two characters. And we could have the folks in a room led by a discussion
I understand.
By someone else and see if we could work out suitable protections that make sense.
Okay. Well, so I'm going to draw a line under it simply by saying that's an interesting idea and let's talk about it. There's no point in discussing it now, but it's certainly worth talking about, especially if we think that there's a possibility that the PDP itself won't reach a conclusion. We're going to have to figure out a way around that. Donna.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Donna Austin. I'm not sure where this fits into the conversation, but as a result of the facilitation that Bruce did, there was GAC advice that came out on that regarding the notification. A permanent system of notification of IGOs regarding second-level registration of strings that match their acronyms in two languages, and a parallel system of notification to registrants for a more limited time period in line with both previous GAC advice and GNSO recommendations. And in the council response to that advice, I think we agreed with it that that could move forward. So I'm just wondering whether that's the potential break to this. So maybe that's a starting point.
The question is whether or not I agree with you. The question is whether or not it would be acceptable. So I'm going to say acceptable to the GAC. I know that's an outrageous thing to say, but the question is whether it would be acceptable to the IGOs that they proceed with that without a curative rights mechanism. Because the problem they have is if they then get registered by someone else, they're notified of it, but I suspect that they would argue that there's nothing they can do about it. So But I'm not saying it's not a starting point.
I think James is in the room here somewhere, but this was 12 months ago, so my recollection isn't terrific, but I actually thought that there was an agreement to move forward with at least setting up this notification system. And if that's, we're 12 months down the track already, and if that hasn't started, then we're already behind the eight ball. So
that's a good question. Yeah, Akram, thanks. Would you like to answer that one? Preferably without just nodding.
We have started to look into it, but we don't think it's going to take an extensive amount of time to actually be able to implement it. So once we have the instructions to implement it, it will take us probably a few, few weeks.
So you won't, thank you, Akram. So, good Lord. I mean, welcome, Bruce.
Hi, Chris. Just one comment. It's probably just a particular language you're using, but you're saying there's no curative right. What we actually did here when we ran the consultation or facilitated session is that a number of the IGOs actually do have legal rights. And, for example, in Australia there's law that protects IGOs in particular situations. So there is a curative right. They have a right. We don't create the right. The right sure. that they already have. So I think really what the GNSO was looking at is there a way of reaching an agreement on a dispute resolution mechanism? We have, and using trademarks as an example, there's a trademark right. We've never created that right. That's created by law outside of ICANN. But we came up with a dispute resolution process, which was UDRP, as an efficient way of looking at it as a dispute. And then the fallback from that dispute, if you disagreed with the outcome, is you always had the right to fall back on the courts of law. So I think a holding position, so to speak, would be as long as you have a watch list and you're notifying the IGO, they can then exercise their legal rights. And then the question is there a way of reaching agreement here on any separate dispute mechanism? And it sounds like what I was hearing from the chair of the working group is they hadn't reached a resolution on an agreeable dispute mechanism. But let's just be clear that they have legal rights and they can use their laws that they have under those legal rights.
Thank you, Bruce. I appreciate that. So you won't be surprised to hear that this may well come up in the GAC this afternoon, so we'll talk to them as well. But I think I'm happy, John, to take this offline now and discuss it separately. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. There's nothing else on that then. What we'd originally put up here as a fourth item we thought was probably going to take too much time and needs to a little more thought on our side.
Actually, so we have a response.
You have a response? All right. Why don't you help us inform
we
our
think
thinking.
It's a great idea. The contracts are long and complicated and there are all kinds of millions of things out there. That add to the complexity, and it does make sense to do this, and we've heard from org that they are willing to enter into conversations about that.
Excellent news. And we were going to hold off and come back to you once we'd had more thought suggestions, so we'll work with staff and maybe have more to discuss in the future once it's moved along a bit. What we were going to offer, or we'll turn to now, is can't get away from GDPR. We tried, but we just couldn't. And I'm going to ask Sam to introduce some thoughts we wanted to share with you.
This is Sam Yoren. You seemed so disappointed we hadn't gotten a GDPR yet, so this one's for you.
I tell you, I want to have a GDPR-free zone at the next ICANN meeting. So
the concept of a regulatory framework, as we were thinking about it earlier today in our joint session, this is the much more pressing matter of what the regulatory framework is going to look like for this GDPR compliance model and what changes to agreements or new agreements or waiver processes are going to need to be put in place to memorialize whatever the model ends up looking like. So we specifically wanted to ask you guys as the board, what conversations have you been having at the board level and whether the board is anticipating any specific action in relation to these this potential like regulatory framework, because we know staff has not answered what this is going to look like yet. So
I'm sure I'm supposed to disclaim anything about a regulatory framework. John is shaking his head. Okay, consider that done. We spent a great deal of time. We've spent time at all of our workshops and meetings for the past year on this issue, and we spent a considerable amount of time discussing this this week. We're monitoring the situation very closely and very much looking forward to reports as soon as they are available about progress over the next couple of weeks with the Article 29 Working Party. As Joran has said, ICANN is going to be engaged in those. We began conversations about what role, if any, there is for the board. There are several ways in which whatever the compliance waiver or whatever it is could be put into place, ranging from the announcement by ICANN that it will consider you to be in compliance if you do X, Y, and Z, and look at variations to something like adoption of a temporary specification. Strongly underline the fact that this is not, well, I'm not talking about that crazy contract amendment for any reason that we subjected to constitutional balancing tests. We're not talking about that, but a provision that's been in the contract with registries and registrars forever, which permits the creation of a temporary specification on an emergency basis. With very strict deadlines regarding creation of a PDP, the period of time that it could be in place. Depending on what the recommendation from ORG is on that, the board may or may not have an official role to take. So if it would be a temporary specification, then that would have to be something that the board adopted, having satisfied itself that it met that the circumstances met the test for doing that. So we will be watching this closely. At this point, no decision has been made. We're looking for more guidance, particularly from the DPAs.
Can I just ask a quick follow-up to what Becky said?
I just want to make my comment. Yeah. We are not talking about a regulatory framework here. Thank you.
Yes, and Becky did the full disclosure. I was just using the short term, the shorthand term from the mountain of paperwork that will land on all of us. Is that better? My follow-up question is, do you have any further insight on timing as to like when that information will come back from the DPAs, when the board will continue this discussion?
So I believe that ORG has told us that they expect to have conversations the week of the 26th. Could be more like the 27th or the 28th. I think there will be people on hand in Brussels to have those conversations in person. As we were talking about this earlier, it's likely that there's going to need to be some give and take. They do have the cookbook. They received it at the same time that it was published. And hopefully there will be able to be very substantive conversations on that. They may come back with something, and it may be that we need to go back and say, you said X, but we really need to understand whether you meant whatever. So time is a-wasting, and I'm just going to channel Stephanie when I tell you how much I hate being yelled at by my engineers every day. So I totally feel your pain. I hope we will have some update following the meetings in Brussels, at least interim update. John, I'm looking at you to see if you're agreeing with me on that.
No disagreement.
Can't see you.
Okay, thank you, Becky. Let me go to the queue. Maxim?
Maxim Alzoba, for the record. Clarification question, short one. Is board aware of the fact that under GDPR, there should be a board formed? It's not yet formed. And working party, and they will not be responsible for any kind of advice Working Party in 29 gives to you, that it's a different body which will look into the subjects, not these, and hypothetically expecting DPAs to give you the precise advice is not very realistic. They usually give it paid advices. They give you a fine and the resolution why. Thanks.
So my understanding is that the Article 29 Working Party turns into the European Data Protection Board, and that there's not really a, it is a different organization, and it comes into new powers, including the power to force a across-the-board solution. Clearly, the board is aware that the Article 29 Working Party is not under an obligation to provide advice, that the Article 29 Working Party has provided advice. That's one of the things it does, although, you know, at the level of a paper or a letter, we've gotten many letters from them over the years, unfortunately. So we are aware that this is not a guaranteed outcome. We have been told, and that we've heard reports on the conversations that org has had with them, which seem promising. Again, they're not a guarantee, but we also believe that they understand that there are significant, potentially negative outcomes from the absence of advice or incomplete or unactionable advice. So we're aware of it. We hope that we get actionable, clear advice.
Thanks, Jeff Newman. Just another thing to put out on the table is, as a registrar, we are dreary or not looking forward to the day when we get 1,200 new registrar agreements on our desk, because there are changes have to get flow through. So one of the things as registrars we are hoping you help us to consider is, how do we deal with reviewing 1,200 new registrar agreements and sign them all by the May date? So if there's a way, either through some sort of, either through the accreditation agreement, if without wanting to open everything else up in the accreditation agreement, where we don't have to sign 1,200 new registrar agreements. If you guys can think about that, that would be helpful.
So this is a sort of, I think this is not an ICANN thing, but typically what's going on is that people are signing these things called data protection addendums that incorporate model clauses and things like that. It may well be a very worthwhile undertaking to create a standard form of data protection addendum that either is something that ICANN has something to do with, or is just put into place by the parties. And as the person who has to read all 1,200 of them, I guess I don't have 1,200 of them, but as a person who would have to read any of the ones I get, I'd be very happy to work with people on a standard form.
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to put that on the agenda. Thanks.
Okay.
On the further questions of GDPR, we're adding one extra session. I hope you know about that. And the meaning of that session is that you can ask JJ, because I don't have the answers, to any specific questions about the proposed hybrid model. And I would be there to talk about the process going forward. I encourage everybody, if anyone is interested, to come and listen to our grandmaster and head chef, John Jeffrey.
And for the record, that's tomorrow morning, yes? 9:30 to 10:30?
It might be so.
It is, okay. I'm going to turn over to Graham for another issue.
Thanks, Paul. This is Graham from TUCAS, Registrar Stakeholder Group. So I think this was a good discussion that we've had here today, and I think we've all gotten some good pieces out of it. And so this next piece shouldn't be seen as a criticism of what we've done here today, But I think there's sort of a general dissatisfaction amongst the contracted party house with how our CPH board meetings go. They tend to be a little bit of this back and forth, and we don't feel like there's a rich enough engagement with everybody around the table. We hear from a few people. It's a bit of a back and forth. And so what I think we want to try and do is explore with the board other alternatives about how we might structure these sessions. And so, the world is our oyster on this. I think we could turn it into some sort of social gathering, or we can break out into teams to discuss particular issues, or we could make sure that there's considerably more back and forth between the board and the CPH prior to each meeting, so that we've got, you know, enough people spun up on enough topics that we can really dig into some stuff and have some richer back and forth. And so I think the sort of question here for the board is if you love the current structure of how we do these things and would like to keep it that way, or if you also find that or think that there might be a better way to do this, and if you have any ideas on what that might look like.
Thanks, Graham. You and I have had a chat about this. Sorry, Graham. You and I have chatted about this. I think at one point I even suggested that we might try a hypothetical where we come up with a hypothetical question such as IGO acronyms, and maybe John could act as a GAC person, and we could get a GAC person in to act as a registrar. But perhaps that's taking it a little step too far. But I think the answer to your question is we're open to discussion about how we run these sessions completely if you want to. Part of the issue, however, is it's important to remember the constraints we have are that we do this with everyone. So it's not that it has to be the same with everyone, it doesn't, but it does have to fit into the schedule, otherwise it's not workable. So I'm very happy to take on the challenge of chatting to you about it and seeing if we can come up with some alternative suggestions. Jonathan and Shireen want to say something. So Jonathan and Shireen.
Thank you, Chris. It's Jonathan for the record. So I have a question. I mean, I think this is not the first time this has come up. And you clearly meet with a number of different stakeholder groups and constituencies during the day. Does anyone do it better? Is there a session that's particularly productive that has at least an improved format, or do they all feel pretty similar? So is there somewhere within the existing ones that we could aspire to at least getting to, or are they all pretty similar? So perhaps that cues Shireen up nicely, or I'm not sure if you're going to say something different, but any thoughts on that would also be welcome.
This format is the same format we use with all constituencies. And it is an old format, right? And it has one advantage and a couple of disadvantages. The advantages of sending the questions ahead of time is that we can get prepared with the answers. But the idea of getting prepared with the answer is not to spend replying to every question in 10 minutes, is to give a quick answer in order to stimulate a conversation and a dialogue between us. That is not happening. We're giving full answers, and in some occasion there is a lot of discussions on certain topics. So that same issue came up in the GNSO Council just a couple of days ago, and one alternative would be to maybe to have an issue-based type of discussion rather than a question and answer, so that everybody's lined up with their question, everybody else is lined up with their answers, because we go through all of your questions, we prepare well, and then we kind of assign questions to individuals depending on how much their knowledge is of the topic, and then they lead the discussion into that. So it just happens, for example, that the questions are around just the budget, GDPR, and IGO acronyms, for example. And you typically have found on this table the people who are going to answer those questions. Other board members are not on the table, so that we don't overwhelm that table with more board members than constituency members. The other thing is that we don't meet often. So the relation between us is rather formal. It just happens three times a year, and there isn't an ongoing and continuous dialogue. And that's another issue to consider, whether we ought to have other forms of talking to each other in between these big gaps between one ICANN meeting to another ICANN meeting. So we're open to ideas. Not everybody's complaining about that format, but certainly from your end, we've heard it at the GNSO Council and we hear it here, that you find it a bit cold and formal and lacks really a proper dialogue, which I understand, and it's obvious. So we're open to ideas, and let's get our head together and see if we can find a different way of making this much more interesting. And
may I just briefly thank you, Shireen, and you know, let's endeavor to do that. The only other piece to that I'll add is that it doesn't need to be an either or. We could do a both, so that there's a meeting a year where we do it this formally in this way, and then two other meetings a year we experiment with other stuff. So we make sure that this opportunity still exists, but there are others as well.
Well, I agree. So let me ask you to let me give you a takeaway to think about and see if come back and talk about it. One thing we could do, for example, is we could it depends on whether the rest of the people in this room really just want to sit there and listen to us, or would rather be participating. Because one thing we could do is we could say, right, just what we've got here is we've got a budget question, we've got a reserve fund question, we've got an IGO acronyms question. We're going to have three groups of people around the room, and if you're interested in the IGO question, go sit there, and Chris and a couple of other board members will do that. And then on the budget question, we'll have Shireen and Xavier and whatever. I mean, that's just an idea, but the point is that would then mean that it's not all that information is not being disseminated to everybody. I'm fine with it, but if you guys want to have a think about that and come back and talk, happy to consider it.
I actually don't think that it means that the information can't be disseminated out. We could, instead of doing a full transcript, have note takers and do minutes, right? Lots of love for the minutes suggestion.
Hey, Donna.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Donna Austin. I think it's important that if we do anything like this, we understand what the purpose is. So I think, you know, John's come to you today. He's got a question that we think is within the remit of the board. So we're looking to you for an answer. So I think that's, you know, this is, it's a great idea. We get 90 minutes twice a year now, because we don't meet during the meeting B. Yeah, so 90 minutes twice a year. So I think if we're going to do something like this, that we really understand what the purpose of it is and what we want to get out of it. I've heard Joran say a few times now that ICANN can't make decisions anymore because you need to do it, because you're the empowered community. So I think we need to understand the relationships and the responsibilities better in issues that we're dealing with. I think there's a few things that we can, you know, that potentially we can come away with and do something that out of this meeting, and that is, you know, the options paper on the reviews. I think that's a legitimate thing that we can come out and maybe we can help engage that community discussion around it. So I think, you know, I know people aren't trying to be flippant, but let's understand what the purpose is that we're trying to do and make sure that we can actually, you know, come out with something rather than, another 90 minutes with the board and we walk away with nothing. Let's try to get something out of it. Thanks.
Donna, just an example. The discussion on IGO acronyms was a good discussion, but it had to be curtailed at the end because there are other things, and you said, let's take it away. Now, if there was a group for almost an hour and a half just on this, you probably would have reached some result or progressed the issue further than say, okay, enough of that because we have other issues. So that would give every topic its full discussion per se.
Thanks, Shireen. John Nevitt. I'd like to propose that we do just that in May. You guys have a board workshop in Vancouver. We have our GDD summit starting on Monday evening that we use part part of Monday afternoon, perhaps. As many board members who could stay through Monday would be great, and as many of us who could get there earlier during the day on Monday would be great, and we could break off into separate groups on different topics and have that kind of dialogue.
Great. Could you do that, John?
Thanks, Chuck Gomes. Just listening to all this is great discussion. If there's a question that just needs an answer, I'm not sure that's great for this kind of forum. Now, you can get clarity on that, but I think one of the things to consider is topics, and this was kind of mentioned, that you really want to have interaction for, I think are much more beneficial if that's, and Donna's right, what's the objective? If you want interaction, a question that just needs an answer doesn't generate much interaction. Those kind of things could be handled offline just as easily, even the clarification.
Thanks, Chuck. Great to see you.
All right. Excellent exchange at the end, especially at the end. We will follow up, and I think we're at time, so we thank everybody.
Thank you.
And we'll see you all around and about.